Here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
I think we're live.
We are.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a boat, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge with a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and I'm your host. This is MJ Network. And it is minus degrees outside, but the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, but we don't really care. It's beautiful. And I am so excited. The 12th edition of MJ Magazine came out on Smashwords yesterday. It should be out on Amazon, I hope, next week. And this is a special edition, writers of all ages. We've got writers from ages 5 to a lot older. And we've got some children, the ages 8 to 17, that did book reviews for this particular one. So I am really excited. And I am even more excited. We're going to talk about the publishing industry. And Vincent Zandri is here. Hi, good morning. How you doing? And I hope it's not
cold. Hi, Fran.
Anymore.
Good morning. Good morning.
It is so cold here.
Hey, is that,
forget it.
Is that a new theme song for the show?
Yeah, actually, that is Trinity House Entertainment.inc. And Rachel and Michael put that together for me as a favor because they love me. And
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a great job. And Rachel and Michael have been on my show twice. They're going to be on again probably before the end of this year to talk about their music and their mission. Yeah, it's quite unique. So,
yeah, it kind of reminded me of like the old Carpenters records or something, you know. We've only just begun.
Yes, I know.
You know,
like
from all those years ago.
This is so exciting to talk about the publishing industry. So I read every single thing you wrote, all the articles, every one of them. So the first one is, how do you define – the hardest thing, I think, for authors is to start that first paragraph, that first sentence. How do you begin that? It says, define and explain one true sentence and how you create in your novels and how you start it. Because we do panel shows, which you know, I'm going to have to be on one of my panels. And we're talking about dialogue next month with 5 people.
Okay.
How do you take that first sentence and make people not want to put the book down? How do you do that?
I know. First of all, when Hemingway said that, you know, like, you know, all you have to do is write one true sentence. You know, it was one of those isms that I'm convinced he just tossed out there. Like, people are going to be pondering this shit for, like, you know, 100 years. Oh, you might have to bleep that. Sorry about that. But I think what he was getting at, if he wasn't messing with our heads, I think what he was getting at was, you know, if you can't make anything up, then, like, you know, just write the truest sentence you know, I think it was the follow-up part of that. It's like write one true sentence, the truest sentence you know, and I think that's, you know, so like what could be more truer than like the weather, maybe, you know, write about the weather. And if you look at least some of Hemingway's books, he starts off with the weather. Like for instance, and this is just an example of what you could do, I'm just saying, but like, if you look at, say, A Farewell to Arms, I don't have it in front of me, but I think the first sentence is something like, that year, that fall, the leaves on the trees were covered with the dust from the road or something like that, you know, so, okay, and he wrote that, and then he just, you know, if you can get that down, maybe then you can come up with a second sentence and so on and so forth. So I think that's what he was getting at, to be honest. And the way I do it, I almost can't even give you an answer. I have no idea. It just comes to me. You know, like, I almost have no idea where it comes from. It's almost, it comes from the ether. I don't know. Like, sometimes, like Tom Petty once said, like, about songwriting, he just said, like, sometimes I just feel like I'm a conduit. You know, and it just, comes, and I'm not saying I'm doing anything like superhuman or magical or fantastical, but it just, I really don't have an answer for it. But in practical terms, write something that you know and go from there.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. I think the hardest thing, I mean, as a reviewer, you know, there are certain, the first paragraph or the first chapter of a book, when I'm reading it, I'm going, either it's going to be where I'm going to read the book 500 pages in an hour and then read
right.
it again, or I'm going to just look at the book and go, why am I being punished? Seriously.
Seriously,
I know. And there are three inside, and I'm looking at them, and I'm saying, like, why did I say I would do this? And then I have to
right.
really come up with something. So I won't write anything negative. And if I really don't like the book, I just say, well, I'll talk to you in about 6 months from next Wednesday. I'm sorry, I'm really busy.
Right, right. I was just going to say, like, you know, I'm sure I've written some bad books, but they're never boring, you know.
No. So, the ever-changing, volatile publishing landscape. There were
yes.
a lot of people that have been asking me this question, and they're going to listen to the show afterwards because I'm going to put out the link. They're asking,
right.
define indie versus traditional publishing and why you need both, and independent publishing. And explain
right.
that, because someone asked me on LinkedIn, do I self-publish or does she go on CreateSpace? I said, well, if you listen to my show today, you'll know the answer to that. Because I know
right.
that print-on-demand self-publishers don't read the book. They don't read it at all. And
right.
some of them that I work with will print anything, anything.
Right.
They don't care.
Sure.
And
right.
I've even said it to these certain people, send me their books. I go, I'm not reading this. It's horrible. I wouldn't even put my
right.
name to a review. So how do you
right.
define it, and how come you need all of that, not just some?
Right. Well, traditional publishing, and you know this, we both know this, is old school, where you write a book, try to find the agent. You know, it takes you, say, like a year to write the book, then maybe you send the manuscript out to, like, a select group of agents, and hopefully one of them bites and becomes
mm-hmm.
interested in your manuscript. That could take you another 3 months or whatever. And then the agent might suggest a few edits here and there, so that could take another couple of months. Then finally, he or she will be ready to present that manuscript to a select group of publishers in New York City, usually, or in the case of the Amazon publishing in Seattle, whatever. But anyway, I think we're down to like four publishers now or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you hope you
sit and pray, hope and wait that you're going to grab a contract. Whereas, you know, and that whole thing can take between, and say you get a publishing contract, say you're lucky enough. But between the time you start the book and by the time the book is published, you could be looking at upwards of 3 years.
Oh, God.
And independent publishing is different. It's what I call, and what James Altucher calls, professional self-publishing. There's a group of like a group of, say, vanity publishers out there who just
mm-hmm.
will, you know, like, self-publish any piece of crap or whatever, and, you know. This is different. This is independent publishing. You have a professional editor on your team, hopefully a professional editor who's worked for a big New York publishing house and who is now freelance, of which there's a lot of that going on. You have a professional artist, and you have a professional marketing team. And what you do is you invest your money, say upwards of $2,000, to produce a book, a professionally published book. And that book, once it's published, then becomes an asset. And hopefully, if all goes well, you might make, say, a 10% return annually, 10 to 20% return annually on that asset. And between the time you start your book and it becomes published, as opposed to traditional publishing, it could take less than a year, maybe even 8 months or something like that. So independent publishing, you're like, you go to market much faster. That's a strong pro, and you also collect up to a 70% royalty because there's no agent involved, there's no middleman, there's no office to pay for in New York City and whatever. And then, so to answer the third part of your question, why do you need to do both? I do both because I'm a hybrid author. In fact, I was explaining this to my friend last night. I publish traditionally and I publish independently. The books, I publish one book per year traditionally. And that could come from, like, say, a house as big as Thomas and Mercer or as small but effective as Down and Out. Presently, I have a book in hardcover coming out from Polis in April. Sad to say, those books don't do nearly as well. The Thomas and Mercer books do, actually. But the other books don't do nearly as well for me financially as my independent books do. Because no one or no industry, or editor, or whoever, is going to take as much interest in your book as you yourself, the author, is going to take in your book. And so I market the crap out of my books, and it shows because they sell, you know. But you need both these days because you're just not going to keep your head above water. If you want to be a full-time author, you have to constantly be putting out material, and good material at that, good to great material. So I try to put something out like at least once a month, you know, whether it's a full book or a novella, something like that. And it just becomes a matter of the accumulation of small numbers, you know, whether you do $100 to $200 a day or more than that. I mean, you know, some independent authors who were formerly traditionally published are, you know, bringing in like $10,000 a month, $30,000 a month.
Oh, wow.
Depends on your genre. Some of the romance writers are doing better than that. You know, so why would you go traditional after that? You know, like, you know, forget it, you know.
I just got picked up by a particular publisher for my mother's book, A Daughter's Promise. And people are buying it. But what bothers me is that I finally carried on and I said, could you give me an accounting of what people are buying? And they finally did. And I'm saying, like, why aren't I seeing any money when I know people are buying the book? And the first check just came, and the book came out in July of 2017. And I went in, this is really upsetting, because I went into Barnes & Noble right here, and they said they wouldn't give me a book signing because even though they're pretty traditional, like a small press but traditional publisher, they didn't have returnability. I said, so if you buy 20 copies and sell 15, I'll buy the other five back. What difference does it make? They have a new manager. They wouldn't do it. And I got really, really annoyed. So I did, and I said, you know, I said, how come to my publisher? I mean, I have to say, I'm excited. On January 22nd at 8 o'clock in the morning, they didn't tell me how long or whatever. I'm going to be interviewed on KFC 5:50 a.m. on the Brian Thomas Show. That's what they've basically done. Yeah, they basically got me radio shows, but not enough money.
That's great, though.
Well,
I don't mind doing it.
This is that it would be, I don't know how long this show is going to be. Maybe 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10, I don't know. But it bothers me because royalties are something that everybody, you know, looks forward to. And I got my first $45 this week after a year. But
hey, there you go.
Yeah, something is better than nothing. I was reading all your other I read the thing and I'm saying, like, how come you're getting $205 and I'm getting $45? It just doesn't make sense.
Right. You're talking about an industry that defies logic. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
People get confused because, I mean, my first advance was for $250,000, right? And I've written about it extensively and whatever. And I quickly went broke with that advance. And I can tell you at least two other major writers who have had $1 million advances and are presently broke. And what people don't understand is that, like, say, you know, say I score a $100,000 advance, you know, my agent calls me, he's like, all right, we got a deal for $100,000. It might sound like a lot, but, you know, you're going to get, here's the math of the situation. You're going to sign a contract. That contract's going to come through, say, in a couple of months. You're going to sign the contract, and maybe they'll give you 40 up front. Okay, that's a lot. But out of that 40, the agent's going to take 15%.
Okay.
So what's that, $6,000? If my math isn't too fuzzy. Okay, so you're down to like 34, right? And then Uncle Sam.
Take four.
Uncle Sam wants his 35%.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, yeah, and if we go socialist, they're going to want like 70%. But anyway, say it's still 35%. So then you're down to like what, you know, I don't know, 26.5, something like that. And you're going to try to live on that 26.5 for like 6 months to a year.
Oh, God. That's
and
that's
it's impossible.
Nothing.
You can't. And so then, you deliver your manuscript, and if they accept what your rewrite, then they're going to give you another, like, you make maybe 20, 25. And then you go through that same thing again. You got to give 15% to the agent, and you got to give 35% to the government. And so then you're going to be living on, like, I don't know, 15 or 16, for, you know, again for like 6 months or whatever. And then upon publication, you'll get the rest of the money. And by then, you're going to be in such credit card debt. And by then, you're not paying your taxes either. Like, you're just like, well, you know what? I'll get another contract, and then I'll pay the government back. You know, that's exactly the boat I got myself into when I signed my first big contract. You know,
Oh my God.
I like bought a house. I got the divorce. You know, like, it was just, it was a mess. It was a hot mess, you know. I mean, it was a fun time, but as well, there were good times as well, but it was just ridiculous. So one thing that independent publishing offers an author, if you're good enough, if you're prolific enough, you can really make yourself a nice, secure living without having to depend upon the mercy of any one publisher or any one agent. You know, you totally bypass all that nonsense, you know. And then what you do is you traditionally publish just, you know, I do it because it's almost like a form of promotion for me. And, you know, it's certainly a form of validation that you don't get with independent publishing. But, you know, the traditional books, you know, are, you know, go up for awards and you get newspaper press or you get, you know, and you get the trade reviews and all that sort of stuff. That's the stuff you don't get with the independent side. So I think that'll change eventually. But you know, independent publishing is still in its infancy, so.
I know that when I went to the library right here, and the lady said, she looked at my reviews, she said, oh, my God, you got like 15, 16 reviews, and most of them are like between 4 and 5 stars. And I said, well, can I put my book, can I give you my book and put it in the library? Well, you don't have a journal of library review. I said, that's because I won't pay $500 to have them do it. And Kirkus charges $485 for 250 words, and I think my reviews are free, and there are a lot more words. And
right.
I said, you know what? And Just Reviews is just as famous as anyone else. So, I mean, I publish with Fideli. That's who did my magazine. I don't know who's going to do my new book. I'm excited. It's being edited as we speak. And I'm going
ask,
James Heyman said he would read it before I get it published to make sure that it makes sense. It's my fifth book in Faces Behind the Stones. And this one is called Silenced Voices. People whose voices were silenced because someone did something bad to them, and they're going to tell you from the gravestone, and several people that deserve to be there. And there are a whole lot more that I'm going to take out next time. Trust me.
That sounds great. You've written a bunch of those, haven't you?
Yeah, I read five. I did four. And the last one, Hidden Truths and Lies, got some really important people that actually read it and said it was fantastic. This one I hope everybody likes. I can't wait to see what Maxine thinks because she's doing it. What I love about Maxine is the book is like 120 pages, and she only charged me $28 to edit it. Seriously.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, she's great.
Wow.
So I hope that if she likes it, and then what she knows is that I don't want to be bothered correcting my mistakes, just fix them. And, you know, any edits, like, you know, comments and stuff like that, content, she'll tell me. Otherwise, Grandma, just fix it. Leave me alone. I don't want to know. So, next question.
Right, right.
Work with so many publishers and so many authors. And agents, I don't know if I'd want. But I know that all the authors, like yourself, Gay, or even James Patterson, everybody is promoting their own books on Facebook. And everybody has a publicist.
Right.
And it bothers me because I get all these books from publishers that I don't know I'm getting. And then I email them and I go like, did you know I read this and I reviewed it? Did you know I interviewed your author and I told you? They don't even listen. And that bothers me because they're paying for a publicist. And yesterday, 2 days ago, I interviewed Mark Cameron. And I'm going to do another interview with him next month for a different series.
Right.
And I sent a note to his publicist. I said, would you like to listen? She said, enjoy your chat. I go, like, aren't you supposed to listen to promote the book? Because it's a good book, Oath of Office. I mean, do you have a publicist that you know, or you just promote them yourself, which is better?
I have a marketing guy, yeah. Of course, you know, with the publishing houses, I did, you know, like Polis and Down and Out and Thomas and Mercer, they have marketing departments and, you know, and the publicists and all that sort of stuff. And they do what they do. I don't even get involved in it. You know, trying to think, they're usually kids right out of school, right out of college, almost, you know, for the most part, you know, hungry kids, and they do a good job. But from my independent side, I hire a guy who is heavy on the ebooks, and his name is Michael Bias. In fact, if he's listening, hi Michael. He does a terrific job for me. He works on my stuff on a daily basis. You know, and you know, he has other clients and stuff like that. But like, this guy takes like a personal interest, and since I started working with him, I've seen, you know, a pretty good increase in sales and reads and all this sort of stuff. And I think eventually he's going to get into pushing, doing more of a push on the paperbacks and the audio as well.
That is cool.
And also he you know, seeks out those reviews as well and all that sort of stuff. In my opinion, just like you mentioned it, or just like you kind of alluded to, I think, like, you know, I could get, you know, a starred review from Book Reporter or Publishers Weekly. I think some of the mommy blogs carry almost as much weight these days as like a starred review from Publishers Weekly. I really do. You know, because the average reader who, you know, lands on your Amazon page, you know, for your book, you know, they're not looking at, you know, they look at the stars. Okay, here's a 5-star review, and all right, intelligently written review, and I don't care if Publishers Weekly wrote it or, you know, Jane Smith from, you know, Boise, Idaho. They don't care. You know?
I know what you're saying. You know what? It gets me. I read the reviews after I read the book. After I write my review and publish it, and I look at them and go, like, I read Publishers Weekly. Then I'll read Forward, then I'll read Kirkus, and I noticed something similar in all of them. And I'm going like, wait a minute. The back cover looks really good on this, except they just changed it. And a lot of times the Kirkus review, I'm noticing that they write something about the book, and at the end they pan it. It's a lot of times they'll say, you know, so-and-so may have a right one, but in this particular book, I reviewed Verses for the Dead from Pendergast, you know, the Pendergast, and I'm interviewing Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child next month, and I loved it. And yet, at the end, they wrote something that said something else, and I'm going like, are you serious? Really? How could you not? I mean, I'm very particular, so I'm reading, and I'm excited, Robert Zagorny's agreed to do an interview with me April 8th, The Eighth Sister. You got to read this book. Oh, my God, is it good.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's like one of those, I'm reading like that, and Ian Rankin sent me something, and I'm going like, oh my God, I'm so popular. But, and I'm
Fran, I don't know how you have the time to do it. I don't know how you have the time.
I wonder sometimes, too, in between everything else, between the fact that, like I said the other day, my niece is going to nursing school, and I sent to her every day, and this week we wrote 4 term papers. Seriously. I don't write them, but I help her write them. And then the little girl in the bakery had a pile.
All right, come on, you're right. You're writing the papers, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah.
Figured you'd admit it.
She gives me the she gives me the outline of what she wants to say, and then I send it back to her. I go, now fix it, because I don't do mistakes, and I don't like ABA.
Right.
I said, I'll do MLA.
Right.
But, yeah. But there was an article about a lady in a gift shop. Explain why she wrote it, and why the one thing I noticed that when I get books from unedited, whatever, the ARCs, there are tons of mistakes in them. And I told the publisher once. I told the publisher once, this book, and it was a famous author who I love, and I said, there's about 37 typos and spelling errors. You need to make sure that they're fixed. Oh, well, we know. Well, guess what? When I got the copy, the regular copy of the book, those mistakes were still there. And I'm going like, editing, you know, I know on Amazon they're horrible. If you have a book review with a mistake, they're not going to print it. If you have anything, they're so annoying. I mean, really.
Right.
So why did you write that out and explain the editing issues that authors face? Because sometimes they don't get picked up a lot.
Right. You know, I spend a lot of the fall in Italy, and over the past few years, I've been going to this one gym near Santa Maria di Novella, and it's on the second floor. And you know, you open up the windows and you can look down onto the street, and there's a gift shop across the street. And like for the past 5 years, I've just been watching this woman, you know, open up the shop every morning at around 9 o'clock in the morning. And it's, you know, it's a gift shop full of like trinkets, like, you know, little Duomos and, you know, little statues of David and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
And every morning she just, you know, kind of, she dusts everything and she cleans everything and rearranges everything and kind of steps back and looks at the way she rearranged it. Like I say in the article, almost like an artist who just like maybe just did, you know, contemplated a single brushstroke. And you know, like, she doesn't need to do it. I mean, the stuff is already immaculate, you know, like, but she does it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's like attention to detail, and that's someone who really cares about her job and the customer and all that sort of stuff. So now I'm going to go back to New York City. I'm giving a reading at Noir at the Bar like 3 years ago. And I'm reading, I'm not going to mention which book it is, but I'm reading, doing a reading to a packed house from one of my traditionally published hardcovers. And I haven't, I'm not one of those guys who like gets the book, you know, you get your author copies and you go through it or whatever. I get my author copies, put a copy on the shelf. And, you know, by the time everybody freaks out, oh my God, my author copies are here. Like to me, like it's, I'm so on to the next book. You know, so in other words, I don't really look at it. But that day was the first day I cracked the spine of it, and I start reading, you know, for the crowd or whatever. And I get through like a page, and as soon as I hit the second page, I read a sentence, and I think I said like, and she said, and I'm like, did I just say and twice? And it was a misprint. It was like two, you know, and was written like twice. And then on that same page, it was like two something else's. And then like then I started going through the book after the reading, and like I found like a whole bunch of typos. And like I was so pissed off. Like I had, you know, I called the editor, and I'm like, what the, you know, and I'm like, you have to. I was like demanded that they re-edit. So they did like a post-mortem edit on it, at least for the ebook. They couldn't do much for the paper at that point, but. But I'm like, this is my reputation, you know? But now transition to independent publishing. And I have some great fans. And I have, like, some fans that are just, like, just picture, like, the nice old lady sipping tea in London or whatever, you know, and just who loves my books, you know, they don't yell at me because sometimes they're – you know, like dirty or whatever, you know, like, but, you know, like, and I'll always get like a letter from them or an email rather. And it'll be like, oh, Vincent, I found like 3 typos in this book. And they'll point them out to me. And so like, boom, that goes, I immediately send a letter over to my editor. And my editor's brilliant. She's just like, you know, I can never let this stuff go. And she'll redo it right there on the spot. She'll send the files back to me, print and paper. And, you know, upload those again and boom, it's corrected. So, and, you know, so in my opinion, you know, that is really one of the advantages of independent publishing. You can really, really, that you can always fix stuff. And also even artistically speaking, like covers, you know, you can judge books by the covers nowadays. And a really good cover as opposed to a bad one can mean the difference between a sale or a no sale. And covers get old after a while. With independent publishing, you can redo your cover after, say, 5 or 6 years. You can, like, freshen it up and, and you know, invest in a new cover and give the book new life, you know? And so that's a really huge advantage. And I mean, one day, my children and hopefully grandchildren one day will inherit my intellectual properties. And, you know, maybe by then there'll be like 150 books or whatever. And that could be a really nice passive income for them going forward. And all they'll have to do is just, you know, keep tweaking things now and then, product descriptions, and maybe put a new cover on there now and then and that type of thing. And, you know, could have a really nice monthly passive income for the rest of their lives too.
You know, it's funny you should say that because my family has no idea what I do. No, I'm serious.
No one does.
I mean, my brother knows that I do radio. He said, okay. He knows that I did a whole bunch of books, and he knows that I just did a new magazine, and they don't really know what I do. I said, maybe one of these days you should stick my name in the search box, and then you'll figure out who I am. And you know what? I know who I am. This is me. What can I do? There's that song on that they sang on Voice. This is me. This is me, people. No, anyway, me with green, blue, purple, red, and orange streaks in my hair. Yeah, I got the, got the colors back in, people. It's me.
Right.
The other question is, and this really made my day, is why is caffeine? And trust me, I was up at 3 o'clock this morning, and I'm saying I need to wake up because I have to read these books. So why is caffeine a serious must in everyone's diet? And it's very healthy because it keeps your brain going. And that got me. Caffeine is so vital. Seriously.
Oh my God! I know. Like caffeine for me is my entry into my creative mode all day, right? Like I can't live without it. And in particular, and this will be not that 8 o'clock coffee needs my endorsement. But I like the 8 o'clock dark roast Italian roast. That gets me going. And also I like my friend Ben Sobiec just came out with a line of coffee for writers called Writer's Block Coffee. So there's a plug too.
Oh, yeah, I've got to get that. I've got to get that. Oh,
I mean
that stuff.
If it doesn't make you creative, it'll kill you.
That's my kind. Yeah. I use Javalia Majestic and Columbia. It's strong, but it's so good.
Nice. And that's one of the reasons I go to Italy, too, because I espresso all day.
That's me, too.
You know? Right. And then, but then, at the end of the day, it's like, all right, I got to, like, you know, you have another type of reentry problem. And so it's like, all right, you know, I need a glass of wine or something, you know, like, because, you know, so it's like the total opposite. You know, you want to turn off from it. And That's how I do it anyway, you know.
No, I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3. Sometimes I can't sleep, and I have like 20 books on my chair right now, looking at me and saying, "Are you going to read me?" And I go, "Someday soon, you never know." And I make my first cup, and then I have a second, and then I start reading, and then I get tired, and then I say to my husband, "Can we go out and get some air? Because otherwise, I won't be able to read the next 75." And then I'm in there.
Oh my God!
You know what it is? It's some of them are due on specific dates because the publisher said, you know, the book is coming out this day. And last Tuesday was the 8th. Verses for the Dead came out, and The Guilt We Carry came out, and Free Fall came out. And I made sure that I read them. Yeah, and I read all of them. And I was surprised because The Guilt We Carry by Samuel Gailey was phenomenal. Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that's good, yeah.
I didn't know what it was about. It was just one of the books that Ocean View Publishing sent, and I go like, okay, I should help you maybe read
right.
it.
Right.
What happens when a kid is 14 or 15 is guilty because her parents say that she killed her brother when in reality it wasn't her fault. That's all I'll say. You got to read it. It's scary. But
sounds awesome.
The next thing is you sign, you know, like you were talking about, you sign a contract. And
yes.
I listen to authors say, I've signed contracts, whatever. And maybe the way I do, you know, going with Fidelity, you know, to do my publishing, it cost me for the print copy last time like $350 with everything. That's what she charged me. The ebook
right.
is much less. And
right.
I like to have my books in print. So it doesn't cost too bad to get the book published. I was
right.
asked by Story Merchant to send my book to them. I don't know how it works. I have to call them. But contracts, what are the red flags that people need to watch out for? Because, you know, people read it, they sign it, and then they don't read the fine print, and they don't get it. So what do they have to know before you sign that contract with anyone? I mean, I work with Well Castle. They're traditional pretty much, but you got to read the fine print. What should you not sign? Or what should you sign?
Right. I only sign... You know, when I sign a contract, it's with a traditional it's only a reputable publisher, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I can find a list of, or your audience can find a list of reputable publishers, especially if they write mystery or thrillers, mm-hmm. with either mm-hmm. International Thriller Writers or Mystery Writers of America. What else? Anything? So you know, just go to their websites and they'll be like list, you know, everything from Random House to, like I said, to Polis or Down
mm-hmm.
and Out, something
yeah.
like that. Never, ever, ever sign a contract with an agent, say, who wants a reading fee. That's a scam.
Mm-hmm.
Never, ever
mm-hmm.
sign a contract with someone that calls himself a publisher, but they want you to pay for it. That's vanity press, mm-hmm. and that's bad, bad, bad news.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's all you have to look out for. In fact, someone on Kindle boards, someone put up a note the other day, like, oh, an agent is charging me a reading fee, you know, for $50 bucks or something like that. Should I pay? And like,
no.
Immediately, you know, people were like, no, it's a scam, you know. So there also used to be a website called Predators and Editors. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's still there.
I don't know if it's still there either. But what happened with that, and I'll never forget it, is that somebody put me as one of their things for best reviews or something like that, and I didn't do it, and I got a lot of
right.
votes. I didn't win, but I didn't care. And I'm going like, how did
right.
that happen? Predators and Editors, and they developed the best books, whatever. I don't know if they're there anymore. They might be. But I didn't find
right.
I didn't pay to have it done, and I wouldn't. I get things from other things that say, put your book on Publishers Weekly, we're going to review it. $97 for 2 weeks and 100 or whatever. I won't do any of that.
Right.
I would rather
yeah,
not.
Yeah, see,
you know,
I won't either.
I won't do that.
I won't either. You know, like I said before, one of the reasons I'm a hybrid publisher is because once a year I'll get trade reviews for my traditional books,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine with I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, Suspense Magazine will review one of my indie books, and that's cool. That's like above and beyond. But like I think what Kirkus does, charging for those reviews, I think that's BS. I think that's a scam. It's not a scam, I guess. I guess it's, but I would never pay for that crap ever. You know, like I'm not going to pay Publishers Weekly or anything like that. I'm not going to pay. This business is enough of a scam and a sham as it is, even at the best of times, even under the best circumstances. It's a shyster business. I don't care what anybody says. They will eat you up. And they will be your best friend one day, and the next day they will slice your neck and throw you in an alley. And that's the kind of business it is, which is another reason why I love independent publishing so much, because
mm-hmm.
finally the writer, and I'm a strong believer in this, you know, I'm a big rugged individualist, right? I'm all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the writer has some rights, and finally the writer can take care of his own destiny. And that's what I love about it. You know, it's no longer an issue of like, well, if the book gets published, it's just a matter of how it's going to get published. It's going to get published one way or another. And that is, just think about that though, Fran. Just think about even considering that even 10 years ago. You wouldn't have. You would have just been like, oh, well, Vince, I hope your new book gets published. You know, and it would have been like, you were at the mercy of these people who just, you know, they had all the toys. And you were like at the mercy of them. And now we're not. And I don't think people can grasp how powerful that is. Because a lot of them are imbeciles, you know, a lot of them are just imbeciles, and they don't know which way, you know, they don't know which way is up. So, while I've made a lot of friends in this business over the past 20 years, cause I've been into it 20 years now. I've seen so many shysters come and go. I've probably had over the period of 20 years, I don't know, maybe I've probably worked with at least a dozen editors through the years. I can't, and acquisitions editors and editors in chiefs and all this sort of stuff and agents. I can't name but maybe like three, maybe four people, you know, professionals who are still in the business. They're all gone, all of them. In fact, my first agent who got me my first big deal. Now, this is how ridiculous it is. He is now a professional magician.
Oh, God, help us.
You can't make that crap up, Fran, you know? I mean, it's a business. It's a revolving door business. It's a business that totally defies all logic, and you can't trust it. It just is. It's a cutthroat. You know, it's not even a business, really. It's just some sort of weird lottery. So that's why when independent publishing came along, it really leveled and democratized the playing field, and it was a beautiful thing. You know, shit on Amazon all you want, but you know, Jeff Bezos did us all a world of good. Are they getting too powerful? Maybe a monopoly? Yeah, I don't like that either, but we'll save that for another show.
That's true. You know, the first time I published my first book, My Name Is Bertha, which is between two stories growing up in the South Bronx with my sister, who I miss. And she got me to do this because I weighed 200 pounds, and she asked me if I was going to be an elephant. And when I got weighed yesterday, I weighed 180
You weighed 200 pounds? You only weigh like 90 pounds.
That's exactly right now. But, yeah, my mom was very sick, so I didn't realize that I was eating myself into oblivion. I don't do that anymore ever. So I got my first book published. I won't say which publishing company. And you learn from your mistakes. And what people need to know is that if you're getting a book published, either if it's print on demand, no matter what, don't let them charge you extra for copyright or Library of Congress. It should be in your package. Also, they should give you at least 10 to 15 copies of author copies, and they should give you an author copy to do. So I sent them the galley, perfectly edited. I paid to have it edited. When the book was published, I got a whole bunch of people that said it was great, except for all the typos. I went completely ballistic. I said, I didn't hand you a manuscript with mistakes. I'm a reading specialist, a writing specialist. Why would I do that? I literally made them take it off of Amazon. I literally made them take it off of publication. And the guy that was publicist said, I said, did you bother to read it? He said, well, we don't read it. I said, well, if you want to get paid the rest of your fee, which was exorbitant the first time, you better read it. And you better fix it. Because I'm not, he was $125. Right. I said, no, you're going to fix it because I said so. And they fixed it. It's not perfect, but it's still my very first book. And my mother had Alzheimer's, and when she saw it, she said, yeah, that's you. Okay. But, you know, there are so many things that you have to be. We've got about 15 minutes, but before I forget, Monday. Right. What happens when the police department is corrupt? Find out a network exposed. Number Wednesday, I re-invited Cindy McDonald. Hopefully there won't be any technical difficulties with time this time. Mambo and Murder, but Thursday, this is a typical me doing something wild. FBI agent Michael Tapman and I are going to talk about the government shutdown, the immigration, the wall, and the rising care of health costs. And yeah, I'm going to do it. Why not? On the 21st, Gabriel Valjean is going to be on. On the 22nd, I'm the guest on KFC, 5:50 a.m. On the 24th, 28th, and 29th, I have shows. On the 24th, we're going to talk about autism. On the 28th, Deck the Hounds with David Rosenfeld. I can't wait to do that. It's going to be hilarious. And the 29th, Dark Paradise with Jean DeRosa. And that's just January. Wait till you get to February, March, and April. Oh, my God. And so we were talking about marketing skills and whatever. The very first time you want to publish a book and the very first publisher, that's the hardest thing. How do you pick that very first person? I mean, and everybody thinks that if you don't have a traditional publisher, you're not going to get out there. That's not always true. I mean, just because you're not James Patterson, oh gosh, let me tell you.
Right. Well, I think
I don't know how he does it. My sister told me I haven't arrived because hasn't been on my show. But I don't think he's been on anybody's show except maybe the Today Show. So sad.
Yeah, I mean, nobody does that anymore. But I think if I were Brent, excuse me, I just ate a piece of a Pop-Tart and it's like halfway down my throat.
I can't eat those either.
Oh, my God. I think if I were starting out today, I would, and I knew in, say, Penguin was publishing my new book in 6 months or whatever, I would be like, I would be building up a subscriber list as fast as I could. I would be blogging every day, or not every day, but like consistently anyway, say even like once or twice a week. So I would be trying to create a buzz that way. I would be on all the social media, not all the social media platforms, but I would choose like one or two of them and stick with them. Say, so maybe in my case, it's Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. Those are my big three.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've been threatening to take down my personal Facebook page and just switch over to my professional one, but I don't seem to ever grow a pair big enough to do it. But anyway, so those are three things a new author can do right off the bat to generate some sort of buzz. If you're going to get a book published traditionally right off the bat, the deck is stacked against you. I'm just going to be realistic about it. Even if your advance is as small as $5,000, you're probably not going to earn it back. In 20 years ago, the big publishers decided, they all got together and decided we're no longer going to continue to develop authors if they don't earn out their advance. And the problem being that almost even some of the huge authors to this day still don't earn out their advances. But the problem being is if you're not going to, no new author is probably going to earn out their advance unless it's an absolute miracle. And so therefore that author will be like thrown to the side of the road. Like, you had your shot, you're done. Whereas in the old days, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, a publisher would stick with an author, and they would invest in that author, and they would develop that author. And say, you know, like Robert Parker, who wrote the Spencer series, was a great example of that. He didn't earn out any of his advances. I think 20 years of publishing, he didn't earn out his advances. And then finally, they gave him like $1 million advance in the early 80s, you know, when he was, you know, now that he had had the audience. But they did that. That was a classic case of a publisher really developing an author. But that no longer exists, and it hasn't existed in 20 years.
It doesn't. As a matter of fact, I noticed that R.K. Belsky, Dick, has been promoting a lot of the authors from Ocean View Publishing that I've read.
Yep.
So I always say I read that, I reviewed it, blah, 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 to help him out. He even promoted Verses for the Dead for Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child the other day. And I know that he has a publicist. I know who it is. I'm not going to say who, right. And I'm saying, like, where is this person to help everyone that has published a book? And Ocean View comes up with the best book. They're fantastic. I mean,
yeah, Ocean View's getting huge.
Below the Fold is on my list to read, because if I don't, I'm not going to have it done in time for the whatever. And D.P. Lyle's book, Sunshine State, is on my list to read, too. In between reading, I just got John Lefkwa's new book, The Rule of Law. That's on my list of, I got to read it right away because it's so good. And it's coming out in 2 weeks, and his publicist sent me. I mean, I never know what's going to be at my door because I don't ask for anything, but it's so great. So, there, you know, reviews are subjective to whatever. And I noticed this. We have about 10 minutes, not even. I don't read my reviews because I don't really care. But the other day, somebody sent me a nasty message on Goodreads. I wrote a review about 10 years ago for a book that's based on music. The author loved it because he said, I told enough about it that people wanted to read about the discographies, and this guy wrote something nasty. And I said, I'm really sorry that you don't like my review. Too bad. But the author liked it, and that's all I care about. Then he shut him up.
There you go.
I don't care. I mean, if an Amazon, I read reviews of several books that I'm reading now, and I'm going like, those are not reviews. Those are, the book was wonderful. It was well written. What does that mean? What are you telling me? You're telling me nothing.
Right.
So to me, a review has to tell you something about the plot without giving away any spoilers, but you have to prove that you read it. And I think sometimes these reviews mean nothing. But anyway.
Well, your reviews in particular are very in-depth.
Yeah, I try.
You put effort into them, huh?
Actually, I read the book, so they tell me.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
I mean,
asked me questions, and you've asked me questions on your show in the past about my books, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. Yeah.
I know. I just,
where'd you read that?
I read the book. I mean, Mark Cameron said to me before he got on the show, it was hilarious. He emailed me and he said, do you really think I'm going to answer those questions? He said, I do know the answers, but I realize you read the book, but I don't want to. And I wasn't giving away anything special. I said, oh, no, not again. Don't do this to me. And I said, okay, not a problem. How about if I ask you questions based on the back cover and the summary, and I throw in one or two? I said, as a matter of fact, I won't even ask you what characters you want. I said, you tell me which characters you want to talk about. It was a phenomenal interview. But I had to redo all the questions because he said he didn't want to answer anything specific. And I'm going to interview him next month on another book. I'm going to do the same thing, the back cover and the summary, after I read the book. Because some people don't want, I don't know. So what's coming out in April that I'm going to get?
April.
Put you in my schedule.
Yes. I have, okay. I have a hardcover coming out in April. Hang on 1 second. I have to bring up my schedule. So coming in April. Well, first I have coming next month, January 8th. That's why I had to look at the calendar. Is the new Jack Marconi, Sins of the Sons, and you'll get a copy. That is coming out.
Okay.
Not January. It's January now, isn't it? February 8th. So Sins of the Sons will be released then. It's already killing it in pre-order. And after that, in April, is The Caretaker's Wife, and that'll be in hardcover from Polis Books. You'll get, the publicist will send you a copy. I'll make sure they send you a copy right away.
Okay.
As soon as the galleys come out. I'll make sure you get a galley copy.
Good, because I need to
And then after that, in June, I have a really big first the pilot in what will be a trilogy called – the first book is called Primary Termination, and it's going to be a big deal. There's going to be a massive launch for this.
Good.
And I'm not really going to get into the plot right now, but it will generate some press for sure. Because I'm going and, I'm going to be digging up some dirt on this one. So those are the three big books I have coming out, for the first half of the year.
That's really good.
And for any other information, I was just going to say, for any other information, just go to VincentZandry.com.
Well, when you're ready to when you're ready to go for an interview for any of these, let's see, what do I have in February? On February 5th, Brian Freeman, The Crooked Street. On February 11th, Dick Belsky, Marsha Casper Cook, Alan Topol, John Land, and Marilyn Levinson. We're going to talk about dialogue, which is something that I write in first person. And on the 13th, Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child versus For the Dead. So that's what I've got so far in February. And I'm still waiting for David Putnam to tell me when he wants to talk about The Reckless, because I read it. Oh, my God, was that good? And whatever. So you just tell me what date you want, and I'll just stick it in my schedule when you want it. And then just send me dates. And then in April, all I have right now is the 8th with Robert Dagoni. And in June, I've got the 4th with Charles Salzberg. We have a little contest going between him and Jerry Farrell. Yeah, Jerry Farrell's book, The Last Thunk. They want to know which author I think is better, and I'm diplomatic enough to say you're a different genre, so I can't tell you that.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm not going to
say
anything.
Well, I'll see you in June. I'll see you in June if you want.
You can do in June? Okay.
Yep.
For the permanent termination book? Oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
like
for primary termination.
Like primary termination? Okay.
Yep.
I could do
and we'll talk about The Caretaker's Wife.
Okay, so you want to do the 10th or the 12th or the 13th or the 6th? Pick one. I'll just stick it in my phone.
The 12th is fine with me.
Very good. And I'm going to put you in there right now so that I don't forget.
Right.
And I'll download it. And I have to re-download today's thing because they put the wrong promo on it. Doesn't matter. I'm going to put the show out. But I want to thank you so much. You are the best.
Thank you, friend.
Are you coming to the Thriller Fest? Because I haven't decided what I'm doing yet. I don't know.
I think I am. I always say I think I am. You know?
Yeah.
The way I've been doing it lately, and this is terrible because I won the Thriller Award, but I've been kind of waiting to see if I get nominated for something.
I wish I could nominate you. They won't let me, though.
Well, I appreciate it. But, I mean, I have my one, and I'm staring at it right now. And I don't want to be greedy, but right now I'm 50-50.
Yeah, me too. My husband said it's really a lot of money. I don't pay to go. They invite
it is.
Me.
It's very expensive, yeah.
Yeah, Kimberly Howe invites me. She loves me. So I get to go for
They're all
free,
great people, though, yeah.
I get to pay. I only have to pay for the room. I only, the hotel. And that's all I have to pay for. I don't have to pay for anything else because they feel, here I am doing these book reviews for nothing, whatever.
Sure,
I don't believe in getting paid for my opinion. And I've never gotten paid for a book review, and I won't. I don't think it's necessary.
Right.
And I don't get paid to do my – if it's through Partners in Crime, then they charge $15 for my radio show. Then sometimes
see.
I get paid. But otherwise,
right.
I don't get paid to do anything, and that's okay because – I don't mind doing this. It's fun. I love it. And I'm going to keep doing
it. You love
it.
You love it.
I love doing this. It's fun. And, my mom made me read 10 books a week, and I still do. And I think reading is power. And the more you read, the more power you have, and the more education and the more knowledge you have. So if I can invent, get that to people. But thank you so much. And everybody.
Thanks, Fran.
And thank you so much. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thanks for having me, friend. Bye-bye.